From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made at Nazareth College on September 2nd, when a pair of retired major generals will be talking about this simple but important theme, how to do the right thing when no one is looking. We've asked them to come on the show today to explain why they find, in general, a lack of integrity in places like the boardroom or the Little League ballpark, our schools, our churches, our government. In our second hour today, we'll broaden the discussion to focus on work culture and how we draw the line and when companies are pushing employees too far. But first, we're focusing on integrity and values-based leadership in just about every corner of our lives. Let me welcome my guests for the hour. Robert Mixon's here. He's a retired U.S. Major Army General and the co-founder of Level 5 Associates and General. It's nice to have you in studio.
Well, thanks, Evan. It's great to be here.
Karen Cole's here. She's the Assistant Dean of the Simon Business School at the University of Rochester. Karen, nice to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And John Batiste, who might be a somewhat familiar voice to our listeners, sends regrets. He's the other U.S. Army Major General, retired, and co-founder of Level 5 Associates, who is going to be here. Called away at the last minute, but he'll be with you on September
2nd. He will. He'll be here next Wednesday and in force. And, of course, John's a wonderful leader and a great communicator.
Well, we're going to talk about what you mean by doing the right thing when no one is looking and what values-based leadership means in a business context and much more. And it should be an interesting 2 hours today. You can join the conversation. Our listeners can join us by phone. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. At Evan Dawson on Twitter, where the conversation has already started regarding how you do find an appropriate balance, what integrity means, how you've recognized values-based leadership, and more here. And I would like to ask our guests just to give a little bit of their own background, because as much as our listeners might know John Batiste, Robert Mixon, retired U.S. Army Major General, and what is the military background? What's the brief encapsulation of the career, General?
Well, I've been very fortunate in my life. John and I met on the parade field at West Point on the 1st of July, 1970. And over the past 45 years, we've been on a journey together, individually and together, through 30-plus years of military service, which was a real honor. Both of us were fortunate enough to become general officers, to command division-sized units, which are 20,000 or so soldiers, and make the decisions that go along with that. We were trained and mentored by some of the best and brightest people in this country. I was on General Powell's staff as assistant when he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, for example. And those type individuals helped us grow. And then we've spent almost 10 years now here in Rochester as corporate executives, leading companies through the Great Recession. And we've learned a lot about what works and what doesn't, which caused us to found Level 5 Associates.
All right. Karen Cole, who is the Assistant Dean of the Simon Business School, your business career also has a big local name, a big local company. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Don't make me go after him.
Well, it's hard to bat cleanup after a major general.
Exactly.
No, Karen's great.
No, this is, you can see why we're excited to work with the generals in Level 5. No, I started my career at Xerox. I've had my entire career in the Rochester area, both at large companies like Xerox and small companies. And for the last 8 years, I've been at the Simon Business School, helping to develop and run programs for people while they're working, whether it's MBA or master's programs.
Some of the one side of the spectrum might say values-based leadership and integrity in the boardroom. Well, there is none, Karen. It's kill or be killed. It's Darwinism.
Yep.
And you talk in the Simon Business School now, when you're training people in business, it's not just kill or be killed. It's sort of instilling some of these values in an educational setting, isn't it?
Yeah, so Simon Business School is clearly economics-based, and we do believe that there are ways to gather data and make good decisions. But we also know you can make the best decision in the world if you can't implement it and influence your organization to implement it well. You're not going to be successful. So values-based leadership is how we believe that leaders, whether at a department level or at an entire organization level, that's what you need to have in order to be successful, and that's why we have it as part of our curriculum in the program.
Looking across the business world right now, are we seeing, in general, a lack of values-based leadership, Karen? Well, I'll start with Karen on this. Okay. I know what the general's going to say. Karen?
You know, here's what I see. I see the fact that with all of the pressures of the economic situation, people are doing whatever they need to do to be successful, and they're not looking in the long run or for the big picture. So they are actually missing out on the real opportunities if they are not strategically thinking about how to run their business, which includes thinking about how it impacts the community and how it impacts, you know, everyone in their organization.
So, okay. General?
Well, yeah, I think that echo what Karen, you know, has said, that I think a lot of companies are engaged in what we call the close fight, the day-to-day operations, and they don't have the view that, or the understanding that growing leaders who are values-based in a very deliberate way is essential to leading your industry, to grow in the culture of excellence that will lead your industry. But it's a 2 to 3 year journey, and it takes a commitment. It's a top-down commitment to say, okay, we're going to grow leaders who get it, and then we're going to use a strategic planning process that's outcomes-based as the engine where these leaders drive the organization to that next level. And that's essentially what we help companies do.
I have an email from Mark already who said he hopes that we're not going to over... I'm going to try to condense some of what Mark's long email says. He thinks that we can simplify this, that we don't have to make this overcomplicated, that the real value in business is capitalism. It's the bottom line. And if you are making money for your company, you are doing well by the people who depend on you, whether it's your employees or your shareholders. There should be no other values. General?
Well, I certainly don't agree with that. I think that, if we think about the companies that have not been successful over time or were successful for moments in time, in many cases, they only looked at that bottom line for the day. You know, the gateway computers of the world are represented by hundreds, if not thousands, of companies who have failed along the way. And that's why that, what we call in the Army, seeing the third hill is so important. You know, you're marching up a hill today. You can see the second one. But the third one is where probably the enemy's reserves are located and where your future is going to be decided. And if you don't see that third hill and develop those leaders who get it, using our Big Six leadership principles, which are, you know, I think simple, but there's an elegance in that simplicity, and build your organization with that leadership framework, you're not going to see the third hill, and the enemy is going to be out there.
Now, we're talking about consulting and doing the kind of work that will help businesses successfully grow and grow in a values-based, integrity-based way. But I know that, generally, you sort of see this as an issue, whether it is the boardroom or, you know, again, I said, you know, I think about my son's going to play for Little League teams. I want his coach to have integrity, you know, a pastor of a church. Do you see this as an issue across the spectrum?
I think it is an issue across the spectrum. We see it in politics. We see it in religion. We see it in entertainment, sports, business. Every profession has challenges today with the lack of integrity in leadership. And what I'm saying here is values-based integrity. And that means integrity is not a virtue. It's an absolute. If integrity is a virtue, then you can be selective about it. And you can say, okay, we're going to make the numbers work in this report so that we get this acquisition. But then on Monday morning, we'll go back to the real numbers. And that's where we'll operate from. Yeah, same with personal conduct. You know, the Wall Street Journal had an article in May about bad behaviors by senior executives. And one of the most disturbing parts of the article was that 65% of those executives who behave badly, whether ethically or morally or both, were retained by their companies.
Well, what's the reason then? Because they're profitable?
That's part of it, I think, but it's also short-sightedness. You know, there really is a challenge out there for all of us in terms of the values-based leadership, and that we need to step up and take ownership and be accountable for who we are and what we do on more than just a daily basis or a report to shareholders.
All right, I go back to Mark's email where he's talking about profitability is what matters, the bottom line, capitalism, what matters. And he may hear you say, you think about the companies that change the numbers for a report, you know, cooking the books in some way, and of course we've seen plenty of that. And he may say, look, if that happens, but the company is healthy and survives and gets a boost out of it, the bottom line is winning the game, you know, beating your competition. And if you can cook the books in a temporary way, Mark may say, it's about capitalism. It can be a tough game sometimes.
Well, you've also got to look in the mirror every day. And if you don't respect and admire who you see, then I don't see how your life is meaningful. And it can't be all about dollars. But I will also say that there's clear evidence that values-based leadership, when it's put into companies in a deliberate way, in a program and in an educational process like Karen provides at the Simon School, that the profits are there. And those companies are significantly more profitable than those that don't invest in their leaders.
We're talking about values-based leadership and integrity with our guest for the hour, retired U.S. Army Major General Robert Mixon, who's the co-founder of Level 5 Associates in Rochester, and Karen Cole, the Assistant Dean of the Simon Business School. at the University of Rochester. And so let me ask both of you, and I'll start with the general. What then are the major symptoms? How do you recognize right now, wherever we are, business world or not, how do you recognize when people are behaving without integrity or without what you would call values-based leadership?
Well, certainly somebody knows. You know, they know when you're not behaving like you should, when you're not setting the example, you're not walking the talk. So inside your company, people know. There are indicators that they know. Certainly there are, you know, assessment surveys, if you conduct those, will give you some indicators that people are not happy with their leadership because they don't think it's values-based. You'll also see then things like attrition rates. You know, the A players tend to vote with their feet. And at some point in time, they don't want to look in the mirror and not like what they see. And so they find other avenues and other opportunities. And you lose that talent. So that's another indicator that you're on a pathway that's really the wrong way. And you need to step up and take ownership and accountability for fixing that.
Apply this in other scenarios. A pastor, a little league coach.
Well, I think recently there was a case in the Catholic Church where a priest knew about another one of his clergy who was behaving badly in terms of, I think it was sexual misconduct, mm-hmm. and tolerated that for more than 6 months. That's an example. I think we've seen in other professions that similar cases have happened. I think in the New York legislature, there recently, I think both, there were indictments in members of the House and Senate in the state of New York. So there is evidence out there of the, you know, people not doing the right thing when no one's looking. We just need, I think, all of us to say, let's take accountability for it. Let's do something about it so that we can take the next generation of people that we are in many ways responsible to lead and nurture and give them an example they want to grow up into. You know, my two sons are 26, 28 years old. They're Army officers, and I'm very proud of them. But it means a lot to me that they are in an environment that's values-based, and they look forward to growing personally and professionally in that kind of environment. And I know, Karen, you've got a couple of daughters, too, that you probably have the same goals for. I don't want to speak for you entirely.
Exactly. Well, to your point, I still actually would love to get back to Mark's point, but we can do that later. Look, we all know that we have a lack of engagement in politics. We have lack of engagement, you know, whether you call it lack of engagement of young people or lack of engagement of the people we want to be involved in politics. You have a lack of engagement in a company if that company is not being led well. And look, people can stay on the job but not be effective if they aren't really engaged and actually believe in what the company is trying to accomplish. So you can see all of the areas where if people were actually engaged and believed that their involvement would have a positive outcome, you could fix a lot of issues that are going on in the country today. But since they don't have that trust in the leadership that it is going to be done correctly, then you're losing all of that. And so we do believe that we can turn that around.
I promise we are not going to spend this hour, and I've said this so many times in recent days, but I feel like the media is obsessed with one political candidate in particular. We're not going to do that this hour. But just last night, I was speaking to a friend of the family, and they said, you know, I'll tell you why that particular candidate is getting so much traction. It's because people are tired of what they perceive to be carefully couched statements from every politician that doesn't speak to real values, that is coached by a consultant, that is trying to appeal to whatever audience they are in front of, and that this person is just broken through because they know that that doesn't work. And why aren't the other candidates learning from that? And it was an interesting way to frame it. But general, you know, I mean, when it comes to politics, I guess that's the analysis some people are giving. Is that right now the reason that one person's leading in the polls is because the other candidates are such politicians. They're so carefully couched. They don't seem like they have integrity, and that this is something new. This is something different. How do you read it?
I do believe that in most political conversations, there's less substance than we should have. There's less direct ownership, less accountability, as I mentioned earlier, because they're concerned about this political correctness and being criticized from one side or the other. I personally think that, you know, from my standpoint, I respect people who tell it like it is. And I think that's the way you communicate most effectively is by telling it like it is. It doesn't mean you're crude. It doesn't mean you're abusive, but you can be direct. And I think we need somewhere in the middle of the conversation we have right now on the national political scene. I'm not really happy with either side of that discussion.
but I feel like right now you don't really pay a price in politics for dishonesty. I feel like what we see is that you will pay a price with the news media and with voters if you are proven to be wrong. For example, if someone says, you know, I voted in favor of the Iraq war, I wish I hadn't, they get chewed up for being incorrect. Whereas if someone gets caught being dishonest, people sort of just shrug. They say, well, everybody's dishonest in politics. And I wonder why that is.
Well, I would say to your original point, the fact that this candidate is getting so much traction is sharing with you how desperate people are for authenticity. They want authenticity. They want to get what they see and make sure that, you know, there isn't anything behind that. I think if they had a candidate that was more well-versed and was, you know, actually had a plan for how to improve things, that's my personal view, they would also be able to identify with that person. They're just looking for authenticity, and that's what they think they're getting on this one side. I do think there's this general lack of trust has allowed people to shrug off actual dishonesty, and we don't go after that. I do think that's an issue, though, that needs to be fixed.
I think, to some degree, that media has culpability. I think we have to differentiate between when someone is pivoting out of pragmatism, you know, you're changing a position because all of a sudden you're running for a different office or you're in front of a different audience, versus actually saying I was wrong and just owning it, because I've been wrong about a million things, and I try to own it. I think there is virtue in it admitting mistakes and then building from that. I mean, general, there's no
sure.
way, as good of a general as you were, there's no way you made no mistakes.
Oh, my goodness. I made more than my share. And I tell you what, it was a sobering experience to stand up in front of my soldiers and say, hey, team, I screwed this up. And to do the same in my companies. You know, it's a sobering experience, but it's one I believe that we as leaders must own. We have to own our mistakes, and we have to then do something about it. And one of the reasons that John and I formed Level 5 was because we believe that's also part of the values-based leadership framework, that you take ownership. Our big six principles are built around taking ownership of having integrity as an absolute, not as a virtue, and learning from your mistakes. I think we learn more from our mistakes than we do of our successes. You know, the scar tissue we have over the course of our lives is probably more so from the mistakes we've made than the good things that we've done. So I think that's all part of honesty and integrity in leadership.
The generals have put together what they call the Big Six Leadership Principles, and we're going to work through them if we could in our second half hour. Gary writes to the program and says, regarding values-based leadership, are not values subjective? You have a value of self-reliance. I have a value of community. The exaggerated examples are easy, but the devil is in the perspective. General?
That's true. Values have a range, I would say. And each company or organization really needs to establish its mission, what we call the leader's intent, which is a little more clear, we believe, than vision, and what their shared values are, and state those shared values. Write them out. Agree collectively as a leadership team. Share them with the organization. And then you got to live them. But there are a range of values. I mean, I think every organization or company won't have the same list. They'll be somewhat uniform, but there's a variance there.
All right. Well, at the Simon Business School, you are concerned with values when you're teaching on business. It's not just sort of maybe what used to be the educational structure, that you're baking in these values. But how do you think about values, Karen? I think Gary makes a pretty good point there.
Well, it's interesting. We actually think about economics or profitability as bottom line only. But the fact is, this is what we consider an ongoing engagement with another party, whether that's another company or your client or your customer. And so actually, if you don't have integrity in that interaction will actually break down and not work in the long run. And so sometimes people think that capitalism or going after a positive bottom line is, you know, can lead to lack of integrity. If you actually follow the path, if you have integrity, you're going to actually have a better outcome overall.
Yeah.
And that is
I
what
agree.
We believe, and that is what we teach in the program.
Agree. That, you know, with the values, with the integrity that we're talking about, with the leadership development that you make a conscious effort to do. And this is a journey that's going to take 2 or 3 years. To evolve your culture to the next level of excellence is going to be a journey of 2 or 3 years. You have to make that commitment, and then you got to stick with it.
All right, that's an interesting point there. If you're just joining us, we're talking to a pair of guests about the questions of what integrity and values-based leadership is in the business world and beyond. And they include retired U.S. Army Major General Robert Mixon, who's the co-founder of Level 5 Associates in Rochester, and Karen Cole, the assistant dean of the Simon School, the Simon Business School at the University of Rochester. Now, the generals we've been talking about, the General Mixon and General Batiste, are going to be helping host at Nazareth College on September 2nd, an event called Do the Right Thing When No One is Looking. People still can get involved with that, General?
Sure they can. They can go to our website, level5associates.com, and sign up to come join us from 9 to 3 at Nazareth College on Wednesday the 2nd. We're going to talk about our fourth Big Six principle, Do the Right Thing When No One's Looking. We got a great lunchtime speaker, Command Sergeant Major retired Marvin Hill, is joining our Level 5 team. He was General Petraeus' Sergeant Major, Senior Enlisted Advisor in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And so he's coming in to reinforce, I think, the conversation we're going to have. We're going to have some small group discussions, I think, which will be very rich. You know, Karen's been, this is our fourth workshop we've done. We do them every 90 days at Nazareth. And Karen came to what the I think was the second one,
mm-hmm.
right, Karen?
Yep.
And that was on listening.
Yes.
And so she met us there, and we're just proud to have that relationship, Karen.
Now, you mentioned 2 to 3 years is what it
yes.
could take.
Let's say
you go to work with a company, and you find the employees don't trust the leadership, the management, that there is sort of a toxic work culture, that colleagues are undermining each other, that turnover might be high. And you're saying don't expect in a month that you're going to change it, especially at the top level, to instill these values. It could take 2 to 3 years?
That's right. In fact, we've actually had conversations with other people who think it could take like 8 to 10 years. Now, I don't think that's necessarily the case. But if you think about the depth of the transformation that we're talking about and growing the core of leaders using the Big Six that get it and then implementing that strategic planning process, which is a deliberate, focused effort in the organization, that just doesn't happen in a week or a month. It's going to take a period of time. And then to see the effects, you know, some people, as Jim Collins said in the book Good to Great, you got to get people in the right seat and the right bus. Some people, you got to get them off the bus. So all that process of aligning your team is going to take some time as well.
Roman writes to us and says, what is it about the business world that makes it so that most executives I've ever met are not likable people, they are not trustable people, and they don't seem to have much integrity? How do they get that far to begin with? That's from Roman. That's a strong statement, but General, Karen?
Well, I mean, there are some people who rise through the ranks because of their technical competence. There are some, you know, businesses where that technical competence can be the key to the future for you to get to a certain level. But you don't ever have any real leadership development along the way. And so you get there with your name tag being changed, but you don't have the skill sets. You know, leadership is a learned skill. People are not born leaders. That's not the case.
But are you surprised, Karen? Are you surprised that if Roman's premise is right, and that's it's the strong one, but I understand the point. I mean, we've all met executives. We'd say, "Wow, this person's running this this."
Oh,
this
yeah, year. That's right.
And he's wondering, how do you get that far if you don't have these qualities of leadership?
Well, here's what's interesting, and I'll answer it in kind of a different way, which is, if you tell someone, and we're going to go through the six principles that the generals are putting forward, you look at them and you'll say, that's simple. Like, well, of course. Mm-hmm. And if you are a new person coming into the business world, you expect, you know, you learn that this is how things should be, and you're surprised that it's not. And so that might be Roman's experience, you know, always running into people that he doesn't like and think are likable or have integrity. But the fact is, it's actually very difficult to consistently always live within, you know, your values, your integrity, when you have all of these other pressures. And so our hypothesis is that you need to understand that this is a challenge that you need to work on, that you need to be taught, and you need to consistently work on it to make it successful. It is, in fact, sort of the easy way out to not live by your principles and to kind of leave the impression that Roman got in his interactions.
All right, well, let's get a short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to work through the Big Six leadership principles as described by the generals, by Level 5 associates. See if you agree, what you think, and I think that this will help set us up for our second hour, because I can tell you the number six, the last principle right there on the list is balance the personal and professional.
That's right.
And there are real debates about work culture and work-life balance in this country right now. So we'll get to all of that after this short break next. Coming up in our second hour, the New York Times story on Amazon's work culture has sparked a conversation about work culture across the country. So let's talk about work-life balance. Do you check email on weekends? Do you feel like you can take vacation at all? What are reasonable expectations for employees and working hours in 2015? Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Alzheimer's Association of Rochester and the Finger Lakes Walk to End Alzheimer's this fall in Rochester, Canandaigua, and Brockport. To register for a walk, visit alz.org/RochesterNY.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, joined this hour by Karen Cole, the Assistant Dean in the Simon Business School at the University of Rochester, and retired U.S. Army Major General Robert Mixon, the co-founder of Level 5 Associates in Rochester. The short description of Level 5, General, is what? What do you do?
We are a leadership company that helps companies and organizations grow their culture to a new level of excellence through leadership development and strategic planning.
All right, so the six principles start with... You're going to have to describe number one. I got all six I can understand except for number one. What is number one?
Number one is set the azimuth.
Set the what?
Azimuth. The azimuth is a term we learned in the Army, and we kept it in the Level 5 business model because it gets people's attention since most folks don't know what it means.
A-Z-I-M-U-T-H.
That's right.
Azimuth.
And it is really your cardinal direction, and we use a compass as our visual when we conduct our presentations, such as on our workshops. You know, the azimuth consists of what is your mission? You know, your who, what, why? What is your intent? What that means, what is your purpose? What are the key tasks that you have to perform? What end state do you see? And then what are your values? What are the shared values that you are going to live and work with every day throughout your organization? So that's putting those three together really establishes the framework of your culture. And so that's what set the azimuth.
Okay,
that's
but it's all about. But I'm an executive. You come in, you know, we're doing okay. We're doing fine. We're decently competitive. We have 100 employees. And I said, what's the end goal? What's the mission? The mission is to sell a lot of widgets, to make a lot of money. What am I missing? Would you say?
I would say that is a mission. It's probably not as comprehensive as you'd like to have it. And you probably ought to ask your team what they think your mission is, because you're going to find out that everybody probably has a little different view of what your mission is beyond sell something. And defining that would give you a lot more clarity in the who, what, and why. You know, who are we, what do we do, and why are we doing it? Let's say we're going to be the premier financial services company in Western New York, that our mission is to serve our customers so that we are the premier financial services company in Western New York. And I just made that up. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's a much more definitive mission statement than let's go sell stuff.
Well, and also what you're going to find is especially in the example that you gave, Evan, with 100-person company, you may have one primary thing that you're trying to do, but to be successful, to survive, to grow, you may have started to do this other idea over here or try to reach into this business over here. And basically having this very clear, cohesive vision of what the company is trying to accomplish and what is the most important and what's the priority is something that needs to be established and then brought through the organization. And also to Robert's point, if you asked every person in that company, what is our vision and what are we trying to accomplish, you will likely get many different answers if it's not that clear and clarified.
Do you ask
the
employees? Yeah,
we do. And we conduct surveys at a number of levels and put together a picture of, you know, where people see themselves. And it's really interesting to do that. But it's also very, I think, reassuring to your A players that you want on the right seat and the right bus. When you establish your mission, your intent, and your shared values, you do it in a deliberate way. Now everybody is pointed in that cardinal direction that you want to go. And it's going to enable you now to move in that direction with in the absence of a lot of guidance. You know, when you understand the intent, you're going to act You're going to have a bias for action because you know what to do, and you know that it's better to get forgiveness than permission. And so you're going to go out there and follow that intent and make your company successful.
For people who've been writing in online in various places saying, well, what about the mission of how the employees are treated? We're getting there. That's part of this whole framework. And number two on the list of the Big Six leadership principles is listen. But to whom?
Well, listen to your teammates, listen to your organization, and listen to each other individually. We find that listening is one of the real shortfalls that most leaders have. They don't learn to listen. They're not taught. And we wrote a blog not too long ago called, Are You Listening or Just Waiting to Speak? I think most of us are just waiting to speak. And we don't really follow the tenet. For example, Stephen Covey says, seek first to understand and then be understood. We think companies with leaders who understand active listening, who practice it every day, individually, in their teams, and across their organization, are far more effective than those that don't.
We're talking about listening within your own workplace, to your employees.
Yeah, I'll give you a technique, for example, and I think all of us have done this, where somebody comes up to you, or you go up to somebody, and you've got this insidious device called the iPhone in your hand, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're saying, hey, Evan, Karen, how are you doing? Good. And I'm looking at my iPhone, right? And we're having a conversation. How's your family? Good. Okay, yeah. And then my iPhone's buzzing. And then I'd say, what? Oh, well, let me take this. Yeah. Hey, Fred, how about them Braves? Okay, good. Yeah, I'll call you tomorrow. And then we say, well, it was a great conversation, wasn't it? Evan, Karen, y'all take care. You probably would be insulted by that technique.
I would be insulted. I'm even more insulted when you're holding the phone, looking at it, and it's not even something so overt as a call. You just can't even make eye contact.
Right. Yeah. And so what we tell people is a technique we suggest to them is when you're having a conversation with someone, whether you're on the third shift, whether in your office or wherever, take your phone out, turn it off, turn it face down on your desk. Do it very deliberately. What signal does that send? It sends, okay, I'm getting ready to listen to what we're going to talk about. You're going to tell, and we tell each other, and we're not going to be distracted by me looking at my phone, paying attention to it, fiddling with it, nothing else. And I think that's a powerful technique that we've seen really works.
What do you think about that, Karen?
Well, and I think this goes beyond even listening within your organization. Think about, you know, your customers and your clients. If to do a good job in your business, you have to really know what's going on, what your customer needs, what is happening with the competition. And so this skill is broadened even beyond within the organization. And I think, you know, that's a great example that we can all truly identify with. But also to your point about if a leader is actually listening to their employees and understanding what's happening within the organization, they are going to be more engaged, as well as the leader is going to have better information to make better decisions.
And active listening indicates you're treating people with dignity and respect.
Our listeners of this program can tell when the host is distracted. I came into this chair thinking I'm going to have every question scripted for every hour. What I found was I was so addicted to the rundown of questions that occasionally I'd miss something really important. And the listener would say, did you miss that? Did I follow up there? And so now it's more of an outline. I mean, I try to prepare as much as I possibly can. But then I think, you know what I really want to do is let the guest drive the conversation and listen. Mm-hmm. And it's much more interesting when you actually listen. And our listeners who are hearing this program can tell when the host is not as engaged. And so I try not to do that. Number three on the list, trust and empower.
Yes, trust and empower is really a cornerstone of values-based leadership. When you trust, people respond. When you empower them, people respond. You know, we have the capability of over-controlling our organizations right now. If you go out to the airport this afternoon and stand around the lobby there, the ticket area, what do you think everybody's doing? They're on their iPhones giving people instructions as to what to do. So, you know, I think that's indicative of the problem. We know of executives that have the iPhone beside their bed at night so they can hear the ping go at 3 o'clock in the morning when somebody orders something. You know, that's the kind of thing that really can be destructive. Whereas when you trust and empower your team, you're setting up your organization for success. You're going to see them blossom. You'll see the real A players step up and blossom. They may not have the same idea you do, but if it's within your intent, and you underwrite it, guess what you're doing? You're helping them grow, and your organization is only going to prosper because everyone is committed. They act like owners.
But General, what do you say when an executive says to you, but I prefer to be hands-on. I want to hear that ping in the middle of the night. I'm a hands-on person.
Well, I say then you're limiting what your organization is capable of. You're limiting what you're capable of, and you're limiting what your organization's going to be capable of. And you're going to drive off a lot of good people because they're going to feel trapped. They're going to feel smothered by, you know, the fact that, okay, you know what to do. Fine. Where's your succession plan? Where is your talent management plan? Are you growing your company for the future, or are you just looking at that first hill? You're not even seeing the second, much less the third.
Karen?
And similarly, there's only 24 hours in a day. So if one person wants to be hands-on, your company and what they're trying to accomplish is still going to be limited even by that 24 hours. And to your point later this afternoon, it shouldn't be 24 hours, but if they want to be involved that much, they are going to be limiting what their company can accomplish just by doing that. So by trusting and empowering the next level, you've then just, you know, exponentially grown the capabilities of the organization. So, you know, they may want to know what's going on, and that's fine, but they need to give the people the right information and then empower them to accomplish it.
One of the people I admire the most that I worked for, Evan, told me when I became a commander and he was my boss there, he said, okay, Robert, you tell me what you think I need to know. And that was his guidance. I've never been brave enough to do that level of communication up front with anybody because I wasn't as mature as he was at that point in time, but I've always respected him immensely because he had that level of trust in me from the get-go.
Number four on the list, do the right thing when no one is looking. That happens to be the theme of their event on September 2nd from 9 to 3 at Nazareth College. If you're interested, and you can sign up at level5associates.com. Do the right thing when no one's looking. You know, that one's easy to understand. The question is, do people actually do it?
Well, unfortunately, I think too many people don't do it, but they tend to do what they think they can get away with, which is a sad commentary from people who are in leadership positions. More often than not, someone knows. And I mentioned that earlier. Someone knows when you're not doing the right thing. And I believe, and John and I have talked about this at great length, doing the right thing when no one's looking is the definition of maturity as a leader. When people do the right thing in the third shift at 3 in the morning, they're doing it because they're led to do it by people who also do the right things.
Well, we've got a retired U.S. Army Major General here, who is Robert Mixon, who is the co-founder of Level 5 Associates. And they advise companies on improving their own leadership skills and taking them to the next level. Some of our listeners, through recent history of the U.S. military, they have a couple of tough questions, and we're going to ask the general. So,
okay.
So they mentioned General Petraeus. Are you surprised what you've seen with what's happened with General Petraeus?
Well, General Petraeus, Dave Petraeus, is a classmate of John and mine from West Point. We've known him for a long, long time. He was a very talented and capable man. He did some extraordinary things for this country, without question. He's had some challenges, and he's faced those challenges. And from our perspective, we are all accountable for our actions. General Petraeus is accountable for his actions, and I think that that's the position that he has taken. And therefore, I believe when you take accountability, then you accept those things you've made as mistakes, and you move on.
And Colin writes to us and says, regarding U.S. military in protecting and ending sexual assault against service members, both male and female, and having a culture that seems to shield sexual predators, listeners want integrity and good cultures, but why should they listen to former members of the military, given that track record?
Well, I'm not proud of the performance of our military in the prevention and addressing sexual violence and misconduct. I think it took us far too long to get it and then to act decisively in fixing it. I mentioned I'm a father of two Army officers, two sons. I'm also the father-in-law of a daughter who is an Army officer. And I have concerns. This is something that's very close to home for me. I have never understood or had tolerance for people who abuse each other sexually, and certainly soldiers with a level of trust in the formation in peace and in combat, there's no room for that. And I believe that now we are starting to do what's right, but it took us too long to do that, and it's our fault.
Now, you mentioned, you know, someone like General Petraeus trying to take accountability. Can you tell me and tell our listeners what you think the value is when you see someone in leadership stand up and say, this is what I did, as opposed to, never conceding a misstep. Doesn't that enable more trust and a better relationship when an executive can say, this is what I've done and we're going to fix it?
I think so. You know, hubris is not a healthy sign for a leader. And we don't need leaders with hubris. We need leaders who are servants. They serve those they lead. It is a privilege to lead. And when we make mistakes, I think we are duty-bound to admit them and to move forward, to do something positive about that. But to admit it and move on is a hallmark of values-based leadership.
Here's Ann on Twitter saying, listening to Connections on WXXI News, so true that trust and empowerment is an important value of leadership. We've been going through the Big Six leadership principles that Level 5 and the generals have put together. Set the azimuth. Listen is number two. Trust and empower, number three. Number four, do the right thing when no one is looking. Number five, when in charge, take charge.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the leaders who get it, the level five leaders that I think we all aspire to be, we're not there, but those men and women need to take charge. They need to have a bias for action. You know, in the absence of instructions, follow that intent that's been established in your organization and go out there and do what you think needs to be done when it needs to be done. Standing around and waiting for instructions is not a hallmark of level five leadership. So what we encourage people to do is to really take ownership and take charge.
Karen, thoughts on that?
Yeah, in fact, even in response to the other questions about the military, the reason I enjoy working with the generals is, first of all, if you take a look at their Big Six principles, you might have expected, you know, this principle to come up first. You know, they're generals, when in charge, take charge. And in fact, you know, the reason I value their guidance and advice is because they actually take the other steps first, which is you have to inform people and educate people on what you want them to do. And then you need to listen to make sure that's, you know, that's actually in line with what's happening in the organization. And then, given all that, then when in charge, take charge, because you have to be informed. And so I think it's a very valuable principle that's part of their model.
So number six is balance the personal and professional. And this is a perfect segue to our next hour, as we're going to be talking about work-life balance. Balance the personal and professional. What's the broad outline of what you mean by that?
The broad outline is that we believe that effective leaders, level five leaders, have a life. And it's important to have a life, a personal and professional life. John and I learned late in the game the importance of having that balance. And I'll tell you, the regrets we have from having over-torqued ourselves for many years is that we miss some time, windows of time with our family. Then, you know, you can't get it back again. When you miss a soccer season, you know, you can't go back and buy her a bicycle, and that's going to make it all better. When you don't celebrate family successes and the goodness of births and relationships and things like that inside your organization, you're doing a great disservice to those that you lead. You have the privilege of leading. You have to balance your life. And when you balance it, then others balance, and they understand the importance of balance. You know, our millennial generations and that are coming up through the ranks and X and Y, you know, these men and women, they want to follow an example that makes sense in a personal and professional way. Balance makes sense. When you control your time more effectively and you allocate more time to those that you're leading to allow them to plan and live their lives in a meaningful way, you just create a healthy organization. The workaholics are not, it's not a healthy environment.
There have to be diminishing returns. Hours 71 to 80 that you're working can't be as productive as 1 to 10.
They're not. And I would say at least 50% of our time as leaders is usually wasted. We waste about 50% of our time every day because we don't plan. Now, you know, stuff happens. We know that. But when you think about what you're going to do next, like the evening before you go home, you think about what the next day is going to look like, and you plan accordingly, and you walk out the door at a reasonable hour having done that, you've set conditions for the next day to be far more effective, and the people around you are going to start doing the same thing.
But Karen, I can't tell you how many people on Twitter have been writing in saying that they feel the pressure of, if they work 8 to 5, they feel the pressure of people around them looking like, why are you leaving early?
Yeah, and you brought up the millennial piece, where I come from a different generation where, you know, we might look at a millennial and they're saying, yeah, my personal life is just as important as my work life. And some of us are, you know, didn't have that experience when we were in our 20s. But here's the difference and why I think you need all the pieces together. If you have a plan, you know what you're trying to accomplish and know how you're doing against that goal, then those extra hours aren't necessarily going to be valuable. You know how you can be most effective and then move forward. I think we don't live in an 8-to-5 world, but I do think we live in a world where you can make the right decisions based on information. So you're doing the most effective job for your company, your organization, and that balance is going to be important.
Listeners, next hour we're going to be welcoming some executives from local companies to talk about how they define work-life balance within their companies, how they communicate with their employees. We've heard from a number of people already who say they feel like they can't even take vacation, or even on weekends, they must be checking email on an hourly basis. You know, you're shaking your head already, General.
I am shaking my head because what we suggest to people that we've learned from experience is, you know, you don't send emails to people on the weekends. You may have all these great ideas.
You say that to executives.
Yes, we do. You know, you may have all these great ideas while you're, you know, figuring out how the Bills are going to march their way to the playoffs. But you don't send the message. You can create it, but you send them Monday morning at 8 o'clock. And when people need, if they have a hair on fire, what we call a hair on fire, piece of information they need to give you, they text you or you text them and say, I'll call you in 15 minutes. So you can walk away from the baseball field and take that call on that priority issue. But you don't email people all hours, day and night. It's not healthy.
And it's interesting what you're hearing the general say. He's talking about the message for executives, not saying to workers, don't check. Set the tone from the top down.
Right.
Interesting. Eric writes to us, thanks for actually talking about integrity in business and for this conversation. Can you get them to come talk to my boss?
We'll be happy to. Go to our website, send us a note, and we'll make it happen.
Thank you, Eric. We've been talking to retired U.S. Army Major General Robert Mixon, who is the co-founder of Level 5 Associates. That is what they do. I don't know, Eric, maybe you can send your boss to them and see them on September 2nd.
Absolutely.
September 2nd from 9 to 3, they're going to be at Nazareth College and talking about the fourth plank out of six of the Big Six leadership principles. It's do the right thing when no one is looking. And give me a sketch for what that day is going to look like.
It's going to start off with a keynote presentation that John and I will do on this topic. And we'll tell some stories of our lives and how we have learned this lesson. Then we'll have a small group discussion, which is usually very rich, around a case study with some key questions. So you'll be in small groups of six or eight. Then we'll have Sergeant Major Hill come in for his lunchtime presentation on his experiences in doing the right thing as a soldier and later in his life. And then we'll go back into small groups for some more discussion around the case study. And then we'll brief out, if you will, the best practices that everybody's learned that day. So we'll have some expectations that we'll ask people when we start, and then we'll see if we meet those expectations at the end of the day. And then they can sign up for our new Rally Point discussion forum, where they can talk with John and I every day until the next workshop comes up on December 2nd.
All right. So if you want to do that, it's level5associates.com to
Absolutely.
Do that. It's next Wednesday at Nazareth College from 9 to 3. Karen Cole is the Assistant Dean of the Simon Business School at the University of Rochester. Some closing thoughts for, it's interesting you said, you know, when you were in your 20s, it did feel a little different. There were fewer conversations about that balance.
Yeah.
What's the future of business, especially for students who might be thinking business school, mm-hmm. but thinking, well, I want to have a life too.
Right. Well, you know, what we believe is that we're going to give you the skills to actually get you to that place that you really want to go. You know, whether that's in, you know, 10 years from now running your own business or getting to that level in the organization where you are being a leader and leading that organization, it does mean we believe in investment, which means you're going to invest your time so that you can do what you want to do later. But even pursuing an education, pursuing any passion that you might have is going to take an investment of time. And so you have to learn how to balance those things. I will share with you an ironic note out of our executive MBA program. An alum told me that the thing that he most learned out of our program was time management. And I actually, you know, kind of, you know, shook my head at that, like, that's not what I want you to learn, you know, out of this. But it was one of the outcomes in mm-hmm. addition to his education, that you learn how to work work smart, but just work effectively so that you aren't spending your whole life, you know, grinding away. And I think we can do that.
Yep. That's all part of the Big Six.
Do the right thing when no one is looking. The conversation continues with them next Wednesday, September 2nd, at Nazareth College from 9 to 3. Our thanks to Karen Cole from the Simon Business School. Thank you, Karen. Nice talking to you this hour.
Great to be here.
And U.S. Army Major General Robert Mixon. General Mixon, nice talking to you this hour. Thanks,
sir. Thanks, Evan. I enjoyed it very much.
All right, and it's a short break, and then we kind of pivot the conversation to work-life balance, already getting a deluge of feedback from you, and we're going to be talking about that next hour.